So solar-powered lights fixed onto the outside of shacks in informal settlements may be a better option than high-mast lights in a project, or rather a project in Khayelitsha, Cape Town, as shown. You may be familiar with those high-mast lights. If you're driving past the townships or through the townships, you will see them. They're pretty commonplace. We're going to find out why they are a problem. It's a PhD project involving Swiss University students, residents of the PJS informal settlement, a local lighting engineer, the Social Justice Coalition, the City of Cape Town, resulted in a solar-powered lights fixed onto the outside of shacks in informal settlements as an alternative to the current high mast used in many townships. And joining us on the line is the program coordinator at People's Environmental Planning, Noah Schermbrucker. Welcome. It's good to have you.
Good morning to you, Clarence, and good morning to the listeners. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, maybe you should just tell us why those masts, or rather those lights at the top of those high masts, are not the ideal solution to lighting needs in townships.
There have been a number of surveys with residents and taking up local people's experiences, and so those lights really produce a number of issues. While they're very high, they create lots of shadows, actually, and areas that remain unlit. Also, with the current state of indefinite load shedding, they go off for long periods of time during load shedding, and that's often in the evening and the morning hours when people are going to and from work. Then you also have when they are broken and those breakages are reported, they take often 3 to 6 months for the city to repair. So you have informal settlements in darkness for long periods of time. And then they also hark back to a sort of the apartheid infrastructure and the eye in the sky looking down from above. So for all of those reasons, residents are very not very happy with that type of lighting which is provided.
Yeah. Eye in the sky. I guess at the time when they were positioned, the prospect of having solar lights wasn't necessarily in the offing. But let's talk about it. We're talking about solar lighting, not just as an alternative to those lights on the high masts. This is more than just providing lighting solutions to townships, is it not?
Yes, absolutely. I think the thing to bear in mind here is to think about security and to think about people's movements. We take for granted sort of the ability to move through well-lit areas, but people going to and from work really need that, and especially in informal settlements, which we're in the most vulnerable citizens are sort of living, then you really need those lights. Can provide a sense of security. They can provide, they light up alleyways, and it assists people to get to and from work. It's also closer to people. You know what I mean? It's not one step removed high up above. People have a sense of pride and ownership over the light that they receive. And then, of course, load shedding, as I mentioned previously.
It's also a PhD project involving Swiss University students, residents of the PJS informal settlement, and a local lighting engineer. Tell us about this project.
Okay, so this project came about a couple of years ago. Two students, PhD students, Yael Borofsky and Stephanie Breers, they did a comprehensive study of high-mast lighting and then suggested solar as an alternative. And they took it a step further, whereas a lot of PhDs can sort of be ideas-based. They practically implemented, found funding and implemented and attached about approximately 800 lights to structures in the PJS informal settlement. And that's been underway for about a year or two and closely monitored. And the really nice thing about this, Clarence, is that the residents were very much involved in the planning, the design, and then the attachment of the lights. So it sort of transferred skills and a sense of ownership and collective pride over the lights installed.
Yeah, and the evidence that you've gathered thus far, anecdotal, is the perception of safety the reality of the residents of that informal settlement?
Yes, definitely. Actually, in preparation for this interview, I was speaking to one of the community leaders from PJS, and she just says that people feel safer. They playing at people use the space better at night. They feel that they can move more freely through the informal settlement. It's just the general sense of security and that the lights have provided. She even mentioned children playing in the evenings in some of the narrow lanes. Whereas that would not have been the case with high mast lighting.
I think that's absolutely wonderful. Let's take a listen to a voice note that has come through about this particular project. Joe, you want to play it?
My name is Kolelo Maha. I am one of PJS Informal Settlement Leadership, says as secretary. I was involved in the project from November 2018 till now, because now we're busy doing monitoring and also doing maintenance of the solar light. The impact of the lights in the last 2 to 3 years, the researchers did their research of darkness in the area. Then after installation, the path was bright, and also I did my observation that all the area was bright. Because of low shading that affect the whole South Africa, PJS community are proud and feel comfortable, because when it is dark, the area was bright because of these solar lights. We managed to hire our youth in the community for more than 30 and gave them different skills, start with survey, light installation, and also in maintenance. And now kids can play outside during night in the summer season. The community can chill outside and do all their things in the night because the area was bright. And now the community was very happy because they have relief. Thank you.
And we thank you for that. I guess Noah Schoenbrucker, Program Coordinator at People's Environmental Planning. Just from our vantage points, we know of a lot of solar lights that go missing. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Is that a challenge? Has that been a challenge for this program as well?
Yes, absolutely. I think... you know, there's always that sort of risk that's attached to the project, but one mitigates against that risk through really having people's participation in the program and instilling a sense of pride and ownership. So each structure has its own life, and the residents of that particular structure are charged with looking after it, maintaining, managing it. There's close monitoring and evaluation by the community, and if you think about it, it's really actually an opportunity here to look at the extended public works program too, and how that could be linked and attached to something like the solar lights and to provide security. Yes, it is a challenge, but we build that into our models of how we manage and fund and cost the project. But you know, you have to look at new ways of providing infrastructure and formal settlements. It's not the rigid grid systems that we see that apply, and Rondebosch, Claremont, the southern suburbs don't really apply in that context, and we need to think outside of the box here. So yes, a challenge, but not a challenge that cannot be mitigated against and planned for, and yeah, working more closely with the community.
Yeah, absolutely. There's less wires, there's less cabling, there is a greater awareness of solar as an alternative to the electricity that we need.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this fits well with the idea of a green economy, being less reliant on the grid, and also looking at new and innovative systems that can apply in different ways. And I think there's a point here to be made, Karen, about how we think about providing infrastructure, not just solar lighting, but, you know, drainage, sanitation to informal settlements. It's not just a case of applying what works in one place works in another. That isn't the case with informal settlements. And we have to be realistic that the informal settlements are going to be part of our landscape for the foreseeable future.
Yeah.
And we have to look at new ways of doing things. And this lines up very nicely with less reliance on the electrical grid, which is obviously not working at the moment.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'd like to know, given the success, albeit in its early stages, what would you like to see as an end game in terms of this rollout?
I mean, realistically, the only way to roll out a program like this is having the state on board. You know, when NGOs do it or students, it's reliant on external donor funding. And our end goal, now there are multiple people working on this project, not just the students who started it, but it's been sort of scaled and replicated into other informal settlements, is to build enough momentum and weight to make the city and or the state of South Africa take this very seriously as an alternative. It can complement high-mast lighting. It doesn't have to do either or. But because the funds and the resources and the drive to deliver this only exists within the state of South Africa. It shouldn't be something external to that. And the challenge therein is that the state is rigorous in sort of its policy, in the way things work, can't work, how money can be spent, that sort of thing. So we have to create mechanisms within the state to deliver alternative modes of infrastructure and informal settlements.
Yeah, I've just noticed an article from Ground Up. It says, so far, solar public lights have been provided to individual structures only, but future projects will consider public space lighting for toilets and other critical spaces, firstly, not impacted by load shedding. And then the City of Cape Town has also been actively exploring options for informal settlements in collaboration with the Alternative Service Delivery Unit, the ASDU. Talk to us about that collaboration.
Yes, absolutely. The City of Cape Town is aware of our project and the various people who support the project and are interested in the project. And some research has recently been concluded by Green Cape, which is sort of a service provider to the city, and on the cost benefits of solar. So the city is definitely interested and excited about it. But my question to the city and to officials, can they make it work from a policy, institutional and funding point of view? Because when you work with the city, often as I do, they say, great idea, but our policies don't allow it, but the funding doesn't allow it. So the city needs to create an institutional landscape wherein this can be provided. And critically, they have to include in that landscape a place for community participation and for NGO support to provide the light, because that component is the mitigation against the sort of theft, the disinterestedness in any infrastructure provided. If we have a moment, I can sort of expand on that a bit more.
Yes, please. Please, we listen.
So what often happens is you would find any infrastructure provided, whether it's a toilet or a road, there's not really much participation of the informal residents therein. So when you have that, it's sort of you get an, oh, it's just arriving. Oh, it's just here. But if you're involved in the planning, the design, there's really then a sense of ownership and pride that's imbued alongside the project, and that leads to longevity. So we have resources in South Africa. We have funding for infrastructure provision and informal settlement, but I don't believe that we're spending it in quite the most efficient way. Yeah. I think this would be a more efficient way of looking at it. I don't believe that South Africa is actually a resource scarce state in this case. I just think we should spend the money better.
And maybe just let's extrapolate to the end. We haven't really seen enthusiastic response to suggestions that maybe just we should have solar panels on in townships, on shacks, on the roofs of shacks, generating electricity, feeding it into the grid, and driving more than just the lighting needs of an informal settlement. Can we extrapolate to the nth and think maybe of a future where solar power is driving household appliances and more than just the lighting in the townships?
Absolutely. I mean, all of these type of projects are built on sort of incremental development. You know, you start off with one thing, and if it's successful, you keep on building on that and new opportunities arise to do that. I think to do something like that, we have to stop thinking about informal settlements as impermanent, as sort of transit areas on the way to formality. We have to think of them as permanent. And we have to think of ways that we can improve conditions and livelihoods through infrastructure provision to accept their permanence on the urban landscape in South Africa.
Solar-powered townships, I'm thinking free Wi-Fi and our problems are solved.
Yes, I mean, there are examples of Wi-Fi and informal settlements. And we're talking about the light here, but there's a range of infrastructure. I mean, who hasn't heard about all the flooding and informal settlements over the last couple of weeks and the deluge of rains we've experienced? And we need to think about how we can be, instead of just reacting to these things as they happen, there's a problem, we react. We need to be proactive. We need to think about what we can do now to anticipate what's going to become. And, you know, it hurts everybody's heart to hear about everybody flooding. But if we flood every year, all informal settlements flood every year. So why are we not looking at infrastructure that we can put into informal settlements in order to mitigate flooding? We need to be one step ahead of the game here. And It's the same with lighting. We can really think about this in different ways.
Okay, I was going to ask you to link the dots between solar-powered lighting and flooding, but you're saying there are innovative, out-of-the-box solutions that are on offer. And again, young people are driving a revolution in thought that we are really excited about. So thank you to you, Noah. Sharon Brooker is the program coordinator at the People's Environmental Planning. It's young people that are going to bring solutions to our problem, not the generation that seeks to hold on to power in politics and keep us trapped in a past that is divisive and painful. It's young people that aren't as invested as older folks in the past. More invested in a better future for all of us. At 10:57, time for